Monday. Open wide dev fans.
Get ready
to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, node modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development. The hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax. In this episode, we are going to be bike shedding, which, for those of you who don't know, it's basically about arguing about things that don't matter. So we're going to be getting people really spicy because let me tell you, Wes even just mentioned that we're going to be tweeting this episode and it started some general spiciness. So this is the best way to describe it here. We're going to give you some very spicy bits in this episode. We're going to have a lot of fun doing it. This is going to be a lot of fun. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a full stack dev from Denver, Colorado. And with me, as always, is Wes Boss.
What's up, everybody?
Sup, Wes. Wes is also a full stack developer from Hamilton, Ontario. And what we're going to be doing today, again, is bike shedding. This episode is sponsored by LogRocket. Now, most of the things we're going to be talking about in this episode could be classified as trivial. LogRocket does something that should not be classified as trivial, which is allowing you to stop guessing how your bugs happen. This is something that is exceedingly important. You have bugs. Everybody's site has bugs. That's just something that happens. What shouldn't happen is your users shouldn't be coming to you with the bugs first. You should be seeing them in your error tracking system. Now, a lot of times your error tracking system may not give you all of the information that you might want. So what LogRocket does is it comes in and it says, hey, you know that bug that's happening? Well, here's how it happened. And here's a video of how it happened. And here's the error log of when it happened. And here's the network tab. And here's your Redux store. And here's all this good stuff that you would want to see when that bug happens. And this thing works with all the tools you know and love from React, Angular, Vue, Ember, Redux, all that good stuff. But it also works with any of the error tracking tools you already use. So they form together to create some sort of a super team bug solving abilities. LogRocket is really, really super cool. And one of those things that it, once you have the visibility of these bugs, it's like the light's been shined. Your bugs stand no chance. It's like turning on the light in a closet and seeing all the cockroaches try to scatter. They're not going anywhere. You got them. So you'll want to check out LogRocket. That is LogRocket at logrocket.com/syntax. And you will get 14 days for free. Let them know. Tell them that Syntax sent you. We would love that. LogRocket's a really great service. So just check it out. logrocket.com/syntax. Find those bugs that you could not find without it. So
beautiful.
So let's get into some shedding.
Yeah. So bike shedding, if you've never heard the bike shedding before, the Urban Dictionary describes it best as technical disputes over minor marginal issues conducted while more serious ones are being overlooked. This implied image is of people arguing over what color to paint the bike shed while the house is not finished. So it's not that these things that we talk about don't matter. In a lot of cases, it's fun to talk about these things like color schemes and fonts and tabs and spaces and things like that. But they are just topics that we will talk about and argue about until we're blue in the face. And then tomorrow we'll start up again. And they're things that don't necessarily matter. Maybe they will help you write better code for some people, and that might be your opinion. For other people, it might not be it. And these are the types of things that are often fire for arguments on Twitter. I was just telling Scott that I tweeted out, like, what are the bike sheds? And there was a couple people who went through all of the replies and started to like argue, like, oh, this is better because of X, Y, and Z. And then they just like got into it and were like, okay, calm down. I don't know. We'll just get into it. I've got a huge list of them right here. First one is, and I thought we would also give our own opinions on them. What do you think about that, Scott?
I think it's great. I hope we disagree on some of these because that would actually
be a lot of fun. We'd like to invite you to not reply to us on Twitter about this episode. So first one is tabs versus spaces. This is ongoing. Whether you should use an actual tab character or whether you should use spaces. And the other, like about a year ago, somebody like told me, like, why would somebody hit their space bar? And there's that Silicon Valley where they hit space, 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 space.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get this straight. nobody is hitting the space bar so many times to do it. Everybody's hitting the actual tab key. It's whether when you hit the tab key, do you get one tab character or do you get anywhere between two and four spaces that will represent a tab, quote unquote. So yeah. I use spaces. I use two spaces because of coding in screencasts. I need the width. I would prefer to use four, but I do use two.
Okay, so I'm going to keep track of these. Wes, you have two spaces. And guess what? I use two spaces as well. Not necessarily because of screen recording, just because I like the... It looks like it's indented enough to me. Like, as long as I can see it being indented a couple spaces, then it's fine. So, yeah, I use two spaces, and I use spaces as well because, well, why use tabs if the space exists? I don't really care, to be honest. I set it up. I'm not going to try to argue this. Don't try to argue this with me because I really don't care. Yeah. Next one we have is single verse double quotes. And let me tell you, I use whatever I darn feel like. No, I have, I use single quotes most of the time, but to be honest, I don't even think about it. I use the single quote because I don't have to hit shift to hit the single quote key. And my ESLint takes care of the rest. So, you know, and again, it's not one that I really care about. But again, sometimes people get spicy about this one because, well, sometimes you had to use an actual single quote inside of your string, or maybe you need to use backticks for string interpolation. Some people just default to backticks entirely. I kind of like that.
I think that's a good idea. I've been saying this for a while, but I think I might just switch to backticks at some point. I use single in JS, double in HTML right now, just because that's what I like. But
that's what I do too, really, but it's not necessarily what I think about. It's just ESLint does it.
Yeah, actually, well, I had to explicitly turn off double quotes in Prettier and change it to single quotes. But that's just because at some point in my life, I decided I wanted to use single, and then that's what I've been going with. I don't think that there's any benefit or downside to using a double or whatever.
And please don't tell us if there is.
Next one is semicolons or not. This is spicy. It first came on the scene in Twitter Bootstrap. It was Jacob, which is he's fat on Twitter. I don't hear much from him. He used to cause a lot of stuff online. And he coded Bootstrap without semicolons. And then everyone got all up in arms. And then it became very popular to not code your JavaScript with semicolons because JavaScript has ASI, automatic semicolon insertion. And if you understand how that works, you can code your JavaScript without any semicolons. And it looks nice.
However,
I like semicolons. Yeah. I don't have to think about it. I teach a lot of beginners where they could get bit by those things that don't necessarily understand how ASI works. So I got no qualms with semicolons.
I got no problems with semicolons either. I'm just so used to typing them that by the time that the no semicolon movement was, so to say, happening, I've already been typing him, so I guess that's what I'm going to do. And again, actually, to be honest, I don't even think I typed them. I let ESLint Prettier edit for me. So
I don't type them either.
Decisions that Prettier made for me, and I'm just saying, all right, you win, whatever.
I think that's, if you are okay with the things that Prettier does, it gets rid of a lot of the spike shedding because you just accept the formatting that Prettier gives you. There's a couple options in Prettier, but not a whole lot. And then just accept it. And it gets rid of a lot of these arguments because that's the way it works. And it's no longer like, people tend to put a lot of value in their thoughts as to whether you should use single or double quotes. And if like a robot, an external tool just does it for you, then there's no like person behind it. Maybe that's a little bit better.
Yeah, that works for me. You know, a robot can tell me what to do in this case. And I'm cool. All right, sure. Next, we have the grouping or ordering of CSS properties. This one's fun because I'm the type of person that changes my opinions on this all the time. And like, I like to rework it and reconfigure it and move this around. Ooh, this is better than this. This is better than this. To be honest, now that I have styled components, it's a little bit different. I think about my CSS in a different way, which probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense because it still follows the sort of block object modifier sort of way of looking at things. But, you know, for me, I think about my CSS in a way now that is all very, here's this design element. It's very design systems like, here's this design element, here's this component, essentially, and here's this organism, whatever, all the whole atomic design stuff. I don't necessarily think about it strictly atomic design. I don't think about it strictly as BEM. I don't have any strict patterns that I follow necessarily. I just think about, here's these components, here's these systems, here's these blocks.
I think what you're talking about is not what I wanted to talk about here, but that makes sense. I actually do think there's a lot of value in getting a, like choosing BEM or choosing a component approach to your CSS, because there are serious problems that can happen
when
you just kind of willy-nilly it.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying properties, not...
Yeah, like, not, okay. Like some people alphabetize their CSS. Some people group like formats together. Alphabetical seems bizarre, but there's people that live by it.
Guess who does alphabetical? Ordering them.
You do?
I do alphabetical, yeah.
Oh my gosh. You live your life like that?
Yeah, that's how you find... You know where to find things. You say, oh, it's a background image. Oh, it's under B. B comes before C, therefore, it's at the top of the list. Okay, there it is. I use alphabetical, and here's how I do it to blow your mind here. In any of your text editors, it's a very simple command named sort, and you just select all those properties, and you say sort. And then when they sort, they put them in alphabetical. That said, I do put mixins and things like that at the bottom of the list. So if I have mixins or functions in my CSS, I define those at the bottom. Anything else is alphabetical.
Huh.
Media queries go at the bottom as well.
I generally do group my like position, whatever, and top, right, bottom, left transforms. I group like those like positioning ones together, but not in any sort of sane way, just however I want. And if I need to know where background is on a selector, I just look at the selector and find where background is. I don't know. That's funny. I think that's the first one we probably disagree on. I don't think that there's any value in... You could probably get like a prettier for CSS that will automatically reorder them for you. That might be it, but I don't think it's
faster.
Worth my time.
I found it faster.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not... But that's it. I'm not going to say this is the right way or the wrong way, because chances are you'll be able to find selectors in my code that's not alphabetical. But most of the time, it's like the last step before I clean it all up. Let's say I'm writing this thing, I'm buttoning up, I'm making sure everything works exactly. I'll throw a little sort there on the CSS properties and get those things all alphabetical. But it's not a huge factor in my life. I'm not going to bed thinking about it.
This is some high quality bike shedding. That's good.
Yes. I guess your way's fine. I guess it's cool.
No, but usually bike shedding, you have to tell the person they're an idiot. And the way that you do it is the only way to possibly approach it.
Okay, yes. In that regard, the only way is alphabetical, and you're wrong.
So. Okay, good. Next, we have variable declarations. We as a VS6, we have let and const, which are block scoped. And a lot of people, even in the tweet thread, people said, why would anyone use deprecated legacy var, which is not true. Var is not deprecated or legacy. It's just another way to declare a variable. And I think that this one boils down to trusting that the person writing the code understands how they work and how they're scoped and the different benefits and cons and how const is not immutable, but it's bound and it can't be changed and things like that. So by default, use const. And I will change it to a let if I need to reassign it, and I don't use var. But that's not to say that, I think Sarah Sudian on Twitter the other day said, like, call me old fashioned, but I like using var in regular functions. And people were just arguing all day long.
Just kidding.
And I was just like, you can have your opinions, fine. Like,
yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but like, I'm assuming you know what you're doing, and you probably can still build things at the end of the day. You're not going to shoot yourself in the foot. So I don't know. It's a funny one.
Yeah, that's a funny one. So I do, const for life. I use const all of the time. I don't often reassign things. In the event case that I did need to reassign something, I would use let, but I very rarely end up using let at the end of the day and just pretty much write on const. That said, I'm not like personally offended to see a const or a var in my code or a let in my code. I do have a ESLint or prettier rules that are set up to automatically go to const if it's not being reassigned at all. So you'll just see const all over my code, and that's just how I roll. Next we have a default versus named exports. And again, this one's personal preference. I use both. I don't think you should use one or the other. I think you should use both.
Yeah, me too. There's an argument for only using named exports where the tooling around named exports gets much better because you can automatically import them and it's kind of cool. And there's default is nice too, because you don't have to know what it's called. You can just import it as whatever you want. So honestly, I've never been bitten. Like, there's this huge arguments as to, like, you could like write a huge bug that's going to like take down the world if you use like default. Like, no, I understand how both of these things work. And if I need to know what it's called, I could crack that file open, take a quick look at what it's called, and or use my tooling to import it. And default is nice as well. So I use both. It generally, if a file needs to do one thing or it is the main thing, then it's a default. Otherwise, if it's just like a utility or there's like a couple functions that need to be exported from that file, then they're named. But no hard and fast rule. I think a lot of this stuff stems from there's no defined rules for when to use one or another. And then people try to like make these rules that are defined. And sometimes it's just, I don't know, figure out what works best in your situation and use that. It's probably fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all need to be a little bit more accepting of other people's choices here, because it's like, whatever, man, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. This one's funny because this one was spicy on Twitter. Should designers code? This is hilarious because so many people are like, well, they shouldn't code because they're designers. And other people are like, well, they need to get the general experience of what coding is so they know what's possible. Or maybe they just get the context a little bit better. Who cares, man? Who cares?
Yeah.
Should designers go fishing? I don't care. Let them go fishing. You know, it's whatever. To be honest, I think any sort of understanding, cross-disciplinary, whatever, is going to make you better at your job. I think I'm a better developer because I have a little bit of design hobby going on. I do design as a hobby. And so because of that, I feel like I have a better understanding of some structure of things, and maybe some of my CSS structure things I can look at from a different perspective because I've designed it in a way that's a system rather than just designing an individual thing. So should designers code? Should coders design? Yeah, sure, whatever. I think it's all going to make you better. But that said, don't just do it because you want to do it, or you want to gain that experience or whatever. It's not required or something.
Yeah, I think that it's, should designers use a tool that they're interested in if they want to? Sure. I think that there's a lot to be learned, and I think you'd probably be more in tune with what's going on, but that doesn't mean absolutely every designer needs to learn and sling React and all this kind of stuff, especially with some of the way that these design tools are starting to go now. So it's almost a meme now where you say, should designers code? I tweeted the other day, should designers debug? Because actually one of our sponsors, Sentry, was trying to hire someone, a designer. And I said, should designers debug? And like 40 replies from people thinking I was serious. And like these like long thought out, well thought out things. So it's kind of a meme now. It doesn't really matter all that much. Next one we have here is, which front end framework?
This one's very spicy. Choose.
I think that front end framework does make you a better developer, or choosing the right framework. But I think that if you were like people all the time, what's the difference between React and Vue or Angular or whatever? And the ones that are most popular and modern right now, between all of those, what you've got, React, Ember, Vue,
Angular,
the other ones, Angular, there's probably a couple other ones, Marco.js, those are probably all a fine choice. And it just, at the end of the day, there's not all that much difference between them all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like dim mock, touch of death. This one is people get real fired up about the choices that other people make in these frameworks. And honestly, again, it's productivity. You're productive with this. You're getting stuff done. Now, the time that this is a really fiery topic is if you're on a team of people who all have different opinions on which to use. I could see that being a interesting discussion, because how exactly do you determine which of these to use? At this point, there's such a nice convergence of abilities amongst these frameworks that to say that you couldn't do something in one or the other would sort of be wrong. So it's more or less, which of these is the team going to be most efficient in and why? And so in that case, maybe it would be best off to serve this as a majority rule situation. Five of the developers are better at Vue, therefore we use Vue. I have no idea, to be honest, how you even solve those. But again, whatever suits your needs, whatever you're good at. Next up, we have one that is also very spicy. These are getting spicier, Wes. This is like hot ones where they progressively get you spicier.
We're going to have the last dab at the end. Yeah.
This is Vim, Emacs, Verse, Atom, Code, Sublime, any of your text editors, people who use Vim are serious in terms of, I'm not going to say they're serious developers. They are serious about using Vim. I mean, this is one that, to be honest, I see the most intensity out of people is like.
It's insufferable, I would explain it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, you could be like, which VS Code extension do I use for syntax tiling? And someone would be like, Vim, you use Vim.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's not what I'm asking.
Calm down.
Yeah. So the Vim people are very loud. And I, to be honest, I am so much less likely to use Vim because of how loud the Vim people are. And that is a bummer because I'm sure it's great. I've used Vim. I use it when I'm on the server, but I use VS Code and I like it. And I like the interface. I like clicking around sometimes. I know keyboard stuff is great, but yeah, no, I don't have any beef. I don't have any beef with any of this stuff. But that said, I think sometimes the cheerleaders of one thing can put off the community
totally.
A little bit.
You see this all the time with people who are extremely passionate about something come off as way too harsh or way too over the top. And I see it all the time. Anytime you talk about something, like I even see this with like RxJS observables crowd. Anytime I tweet anything, there's somebody who's trying to, and it's put me off of that technology or even like CrossFit or people just like, they're just like, talking to you about it like all the time. And it's because they love it so much and they're so happy with how it works for them that they can't even fathom somebody enjoying something else. And then it just puts you off of it entirely, mm-hmm. which is really, really funny. I'm obviously a VS Code guy. I think that there's a lot to be gained by Vim, but I don't think that the most of the population has the time or patience or understanding to configure and learn how it all works.
Yeah. Yep. 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 Yep.
Next is small perf wins. This is a spicy one as well, because anytime that something comes out, there's always questions about whether that's performant or not. And anytime anything is brand new, and performance is 100% very, very important. But often these things get boiled down to, I have no idea. Or here is a JS perf where I ran this thing 4,000 times in 1 second, and this thing took 100 milliseconds longer. Therefore, you should always use this approach, right? Or
yes.
And there are definitely things where like transform, you should ideally just transform, or you should only transition transforms and opacity and try not to just transform anything like border and margin.
Yep.
Like those are good rules. And it's important to note that. I'm not poo-pooing on performance in general, but a lot of times it's just these small granular things where I say, oh, thanks. I'll remember it. And you see it in React as well, where people talk about like binding and arrow functions on click, or like, I'll remember that next time I have 40,000 React components on a single thing. Like, these are things that will probably matter at some point, but for the majority of people, it doesn't matter at all at the end of the day.
Yeah. And there's a big crowd that will say, well, why would you use the less performant way when you know down the line that it could be a thing? Well, I'm not going to waste my time on micro optimizations right now that are going to take me longer to implement. And it's going to hold me back from getting this thing done on time when it's not necessarily a big deal. It's almost like seriously, I taught like a beginner React course on my React 16 for Everyone course. And I did something in like the fifth video, and like, the first comments were like, why don't you do it this way? It's more performant. I'm like, this is a beginner's React course. It is teaching very beginners how to use this system. You do not need to performance optimize this. This is not production code here. This is teaching you the basics. So there's definitely like, there's room for optimizations, and performance is definitely something you always need to be worried about. But micro optimizations, in my opinion, are just, that's a crowd that can certainly quiet down. And that's some advice I'm going to ignore almost all the time until I need it, you know.
You know, what's one funny thing that I even myself got bit with? You hear me all the time talk about using map filter reduce instead of loops all the time.
Yeah.
And then I ran into some code the other day where like a for of loop was just way nicer. It was for like sequencing promises. One happens, then another one, then another one. And I wrote this terrible reduce function. And then I wrote it in a for loop, and I like tweeted it being like, am I wrong that this for loop? And everyone's like, no, the for loop, there's the for loops are in JavaScript for a reason. And that's much more readable. And it's as a way better way to approach it. And I even just like caught myself in this dogma of always use map filter reduce for everything. And I had to like just shake myself out of it, being like, oh, don't, Wes, don't make these rules for yourself because they're not always true.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, it is funny because you do. You end up lumping yourself into these rules and you forget. You lose the script. You lose that bigger picture of, is this thing actually the right tool for the right job? Next one is going to be, what about browser support? Hey, Wes, why are you using Float for layout? What about browser support? I can't use Flexbox right now. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. This one, yeah. This is anytime you bring up any CSS property or any property in general. Yeah.
It's such an easy one. It's almost a conversation I never want to have because first, go look it up. And second, are you supporting these browsers? If yes, can't use it. If no, then use it. That's it. That's it. That's all there is to it.
Yep. I know.
Next one is block formatting. This is another one that's totally solved if you just give over to Prettier and let them do it. But it's whether to put the curly bracket on its own line. You open up a function and like some sort of psychopath, you put the opening curly bracket on the line after the function.
See?
Or if you have like an if else and you put the else on the same line as the closing if block or on its own line. So that's a hotly contested one as well.
This is why I like you, Wes, because you refer to people who put it on another line as potentially psychopathic, which I would have to totally agree because that's just totally, totally weird. And to be honest, I have no real reason for it other than the fact that it
looks weird.
It makes me feel weird.
No way to live your life doing that. So I'm going to draw a line there and say you're wrong.
You're wrong. And you know why you're wrong? You're wrong for no specific reason other than this. I have a feeling of that's the way it looks right. And that's why I'm happy to say you're wrong about it. So no, I totally agree with you. That's weird. It's weird and I don't like it. So that's the way it is. A new function instance between binding, inline, arrow, whatever. I just end up using arrow functions most of the time, to be honest. Calling it a day. Yeah.
This one I was more thinking of in React, where if you have a click handler.
Specific. Gotcha.
Yeah. Or in anything really, where if you want to like, especially in React, if you want to pass an argument to a function on click, then you have to do an arrow function. And that what that does is it technically creates a new function, which takes up more room in memory.
Yep.
Instead of just using one function. Like it was like this big like no-no for a while. You're like, you don't do that. And you have to have this like super obtuse way around that of it just being able to pass an argument.
Yep.
And then the data came out at the end of the day and people said like, this is fine. Unless you have, again, 100,000 components on the page, you probably have a bigger problems to worry about at that point. But in most cases, it's totally fine to have an arrow function in line or to bind it, which creates another function. Those are totally fine in most cases.
Yeah, I do inline arrow functions. And that's one of the things that people would often call out in my tutorial videos. And I just say, listen, does this matter? Like, does it really matter? No, I use the inline arrow functions and I use them happily. Use them all over.
I always respond to people who are like, that's weird because I clicked it. And it worked, you know, like it's like, is it really lagging? And even if you bust out the perf tools to actually zoom in on that thing, it's unlikely that you're going to find any sort of significant impact.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree. Again, all of these performance optimization stuff, do it. Like if you know it's going to be an issue, sure, go ahead and do it ahead of time. But if you don't know it's going to be an issue, don't make things harder for yourself.
One more thing I just want to say about that is a lot of times the people have these performance because they say the Chrome does it this way internally. And this is the way the engine works. And my answer to that is like, well, Chrome should change that then because we're developers and this is how we're using. And often Chrome will change that. They'll go back and under the hood, they'll say, okay, this is how people are writing it. Maybe we should make it faster.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. 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 All right. Last one here, trailing comma. So we're going to trail this episode with the trailing comma because I use a trailing comma and that's just the way I do it because, hey, I mean, why not? If you ever need to add another item to an array or an object, that comma is already there and you don't have to write it. Yeah. So there.
Same thing.
This is one where people who are wrong. They're just flat out wrong.
Well, trailing comma is supported, I think, in IE 9 and up on an object. And also it's better for Git history. where you don't have to modify the line before to add a comment. You just add a new line, and then your Git history and your Git blames are a little cleaner. That is bike shedding. I've been wanting to do this one for a long time just because
it's hilarious.
It's silly to talk about this stuff, but it's also kind of fun to talk about it. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter all that much, but there are your own personal opinions. At the end of the day, you can choose whatever it is that makes you happy in your team. And I'm sure you are going to be productive with whatever, which way you choose.
Yeah.
That's it. That was a bit of a tasty hasty, wasn't it?
It was a tasty hasty. It was a spicy tasty hasty. And I hope we made enough of you sufficiently angry.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you on Wednesday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.